The time has come to plan for a post-pandemic music career. Are you ready to get your career back on track? Are you ready to go in a different direction? We're going to discuss so many great things to think about as we emerge from this pandemic in this episode of the podcast, so get ready.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 295 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the post-pandemic plan for musicians. And there's so much great info in this podcast, just things you need to think about. So much has changed. The world is different. And how do we navigate moving forward as artists and musicians that want to build our music career? My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. I'm ready to start booking gigs. I'm ready for this pandemic to be over. So here we are. We're going to plan my music career with a checklist.
Yeah, just booked a plane ticket yesterday for a week of songwriting with my band. Of course, we collaborate over the internet, but we're going to just hunker down and write the next record, which we already have a great start on. And then we're already booking gigs for summer. It's here. It's finally here.
And so you just do writing as one step of the process, and then later you'll worry about recording those songs?
Yeah, we might do some recording. It just depends how far along we get before we're actually together and maybe snag a studio in Atlanta while we're there. A person that we consider sort of a sixth or seventh member of the band, we have a couple honorary members of the band, has a studio in Atlanta, and we might try and get some time in. Get some basic tracks down for some songs, but it's just a solid week of, hey, we're going to write and work on songs together and as a band, and it should be a lot of fun. Our last few records have been very collaborative, but, you know, exchanging ideas over the web, getting together when we can, but this is just like a week. This is what we're doing. So we're here. We're at the post pandemic. Can we call it a surge, a music career surge? That's what we're planning for.
Nice. I only had one caveat before we get into the bulk of our topic. I know people are still all over the place in how yes. they're conceptualizing this pandemic. I don't know if this is a post-COVID thing, because COVID's probably here to stay. It's never going to go yes. anywhere. But we are trying to prepare for at least the post-restrictions,
Getting back to some sense of normalcy.
Some sense of normal, right.
And I think what's important about this podcast and why we wanted to do this is because normalcy is going to be different, or a lot of things have changed, both in the industry. Just it's been maybe 2.5 years for some of you since you've done a tour, if you mainly tour on the summer, and a lot of artists do spend more time in the summer playing gigs, or just as you... Maybe you've been in... I've kind of been in just this state of malaise since... Our Christmas shows ended of like, what now? Where do we go? And sort
you
of just
and
letting
seven
things...
or 8 billion other people.
Yeah. And sort
all
of just letting,
the state of malaise.
Letting things, I wouldn't say fall apart, but just not taking care of business, because it's like, I needed some space to just lay on the floor wondering what's going on in the world and why, questioning all my life choices and what's going to happen. But you know, in the winter here, it's very dark and rainy, but now the sun is coming out. It's shining. It's time to get excited again. And so we got some great segments in this episode. First up, I want to remind you that if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't subscribed, please do so. If you're listening to it through a podcast app, or you're just finding it on Spotify or on the podcast website, be sure to subscribe where you listen to podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and the notification icon. And also just want to remind you that if as you're returning or making plans to start moving things forward again, or getting maybe more aggressive with what you're doing, we want to hear about it. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And if you're watching on YouTube, feel free to leave comments below. We love hearing from you and just getting the community seeing what other artists are doing. And speaking of Chris, I need to do a shout out for the DIY Musician Conference. It is August 26th through 28th in Austin, Texas. Tickets are only $99. And I cannot stress enough, after what we've gone through the last couple of years, how life-giving this conference is, even on normal times. But this year, I'm just so looking forward to it. Nothing energizes me more than being with a bunch of artists and hearing what they're doing, hearing their plans, hearing their success, hearing their trials and errors, and us just being with like-minded individuals. It is so inspiring and good for the soul and just energizes me every year. And for $99, why would you not want to be there? I think one thing that I always think about is, like, most everyone who's listening to this right now and listening to us to talk, they're probably listening by themselves in their car or at work or at the gym or while they're running or hiking or whatever. And what they don't realize is that there are thousands of artists that are listening along with them that are all going through the same things and trying the same stuff. And when you get all those people together, if we could just get all of you to be together, you would not believe what amazing time it would be. And so $99, no excuse not to be there. DIYMusicianCon.com.
$99 for 3 days of
yes
event and sessions, workshops, performance opportunities. If you went to a different conference for 3 days, it probably cost you like thousands of dollars.
Yes. South by Southwest is like $1,500 for a badge. And that might even be more now, but yes. And the cool thing is this year we're trying to make it more interactive and we're really centralizing it on the hotel. So you're going to want to stay at the hotel, the Hilton in downtown Austin. And if you get two nights or more, your conference ticket is free. So again, head over to DIYMusicianCon.com. Check that out. We can't wait to see you in Austin, Texas. And it's going to be an exciting time. There's some really cool stuff that we're going to be announcing soon. And companies that are participating, you'll have so much access to people that you just won't get anywhere else. All right. Now that we are ready to dive in, we put together like 4 different lists that are just really great things for artists to be thinking about, checklists or things to check back in on or ways to plan and strategize as we move forward with what we've done. And Chris, you already acknowledged that it isn't a post-COVID reality, meaning that we did not eradicate COVID from the planet. So there are some things that are going to linger potentially for a while, but that the lockdowns, the don't go outside, the everything shut down, or that mindset is we're moving beyond that. And so that's one thing to consider, but there are some changes that COVID has brought on that really have changed maybe how people need to plan and strategize moving forward. And so I know our first list here that we have is 7 new challenges musicians face in 2022. So why don't you hit that list for us, Chris?
Yeah. And, you know, I know every person that's listening knows the situation they're in, but I thought it'd be good to start this episode off with just sort of a recap. So after 2 years of COVID, there are some new challenges artists face, and some of them are probably temporary, and some of those challenges are here to stay. But what they are, first of all, we should acknowledge that everything got hyper online over the last 2 years. And this was an accelerating trend anyways, but it just got supercharged by the pandemic. We're all digitally dependent. Our focus is completely scattered. There's 1,000 things beeping at us at once. So we are more online than ever. And yet at the same time, a lot of music is supposed to be social and human, and it's a physical phenomenon. So I think artists are going to have a challenge bridging the gap between or trying to figure out how much they want to be online and how much they want to be like in the meat space, as we now call it. Along with that is the second challenge that basically, because there's so many things screaming at us, nobody has attention span for anything, which means it's harder for you to fight to get someone's attention. It's harder for you to fight to get to keep that attention. There's, you know, streaming networks, there's video games, and I don't even mean like fancy multiplayer things. There's like Wordle, like literally no one can focus on anything. So your marketing has to get a lot better. Maybe even your music has to get a lot better, but you have to do something to cut through the fact that there's so much fierce competition for attention. The third challenge is that we have to acknowledge that there's been a lot of psychological cost to the pandemic. People are anxious, depressed, political tensions and divisions have gotten kind of a lot worse. And whether that's you need to deal with that in yourself or you need to just acknowledge it in your audience or in the events that you're trying to be a part of, there's going to be some extra lifting, I think, to deal with that psychological fallout. Fourth, we should also acknowledge there's a huge economic toll from this pandemic, and you know, people have lost jobs. But even on more of like a touring musician's basis, you were off the road for 2 years, probably hurt by that, and now you could get back on the road. But oh, guess what? Gas prices are out of control. There's inflation. There's just so many, you know, supply chain issues. And DIY musicians already were on a budget, but I think we're going to have to go through a phase of really being even more careful, scrutinizing how we spend our limited resources. Fifth challenge is so many venues closed. They couldn't make it through the pandemic and they went out of business. That makes competition for gigs really fierce. And then even if investors come along and open up new things, it's going to be a long time before they're sort of off the ground and running. Along with that is a lot of your contacts may have changed, moved on. Obviously, venue bookers, some of them lost their jobs. There's also been this thing called the Great Resignation, where a lot of people during the pandemic were like, I'm ready for something new. I'm sick of my old life. I'm going to go back to school, or I'm going to join a new industry or something. So that means your spreadsheet of contacts might just be half completely worthless at this point. And the last thing, just to say something very generally, is there's been a huge break in continuity, and almost all artists lost momentum. You probably put a ton of time into building your reputation in a certain scene. You have a network of people. You're building a legacy. You might have had really good habits and felt a great sense of momentum. And then this thing just slammed down in the middle of your life and you lost that. And I think that's going to leave people feeling angry and discouraged, even as they're excited to get back to it, when they realize, oh, in some ways, I'm kind of starting from scratch. So those are seven of the big challenges I think we face this year.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff in there. And wow, it's been a couple of years if you're looking at this list.
That's the bummer of, we'll just get, this is the bummer. And then the next list will be more encouraging.
If you want to make forward progress in your life, you need to recognize the state of affairs, the things that aren't working, or the things that have changed. You know, sometimes you just have to take a few minutes and shed a few tears for the things that have been lost. And then you can regroup and go, okay, but we have to move forward from here in life. What does that look like? One thing that I wanted to point out that's on your list, I was just down in Austin, Texas. We were there doing some planning for the conference, and Austin has an enormous amount of venues. They are called the live music capital of the world. I don't know who really keeps track of these things to know. It seems like maybe Vegas is giving them some run for their money. But anyway, under normal times, because I'm down there for South by Southwest a lot, and we've had our conference there, under normal times, you see, you know, a couple of venues that aren't making it, or they turn over, or it's closed, because that venue, being in the venue business, is tough. But what I noticed when we were there a couple of weeks ago was that about a third of the venues on 6th Street were boarded up. Some of the bigger ones too. And that was really shocking to see, and something that I expected. You know, we've talked about on the podcast that some venues will go out of business, but to see it right there play out in such a noticeable way.
And in such a music town with South by Southwest just around the corner, you'd think if anyone dove in to invest in restarting these venues, it would have happened by now, but
I'm sure that will happen, and there may be things in the works there that weren't visible. But all that to say is there could be venues that were your go-to venues, especially if you had a good tour route that you had as an independent artist. Like here on the West Coast of the United States, they typically call it like the I-5 tour, because the Interstate 5 goes all the way from Canada to Mexico, down through, you know, Washington, Oregon, and California. And there's a lot of cities along that. And once you start heading east, it's a big gap between cities. But so a lot of artists here will go up and down the West Coast and have venues that they work with in all those cities. They may not exist anymore. So it's worth checking into. That's one thing that, and you mentioned gas prices. That's something that totally changes the economics of touring.
I know. And I feel so bad for my friends who made their living touring before the pandemic. They've been so ready for things to just be normal and safe again. And it's like, oh, by the way, now that's going to be way less profitable now that you are like technically allowed to do it, but you're still like going to be like, oh, is this worth it?
Yeah. And you know, the fierce competition is an interesting one as well, because in 2020, and it might have been even in 2021, where we were talking about, hey, it might be an opportunity for independent artists as venues start to open up again and restrictions start to fall. It might be an opportunity for independent artists to get on stage because the venue may want live music, but they don't want this massive draw that's going to stuff the thing, you know, standing room only where everyone's up against each other. And like, hey, I just want some live music that's good, that will bring some people out, but, you know, we're not looking to sell 1,000 tickets or sell this thing out. I think that was a possibility for where things were before, but now heading into where we're at now, where we've had several summers of all the major artists and then like a tier down or two that have all been canceling tours. And now they all seem to be happening at once. In fact, an interesting news item that came out this week is that Ticketmaster is actually dumping a lot of tickets on Groupon, which, if you're not familiar with Groupon, it's been a while since people have really talked about Groupon, but it's kind of like a clearinghouse for discounts. Basically, they email you discounts of things you may be interested in, and you can get tickets for massive tours for like $25, things that would have in 2019 probably gone for $100. So, and the article is saying that so many people are heading out on tour all at once, all these major artists, that there's just, there's only so many things people can go to, and they're not going to get people paying $100 or $150 and going to 5 different tours in the course of July and August. That's just not going to happen. So there's some interesting data about it. It might be a very saturated market now. Be interesting to see how that plays out in the independent sector and local venues, because there could be a lot of competition to get back on stage. And so you might be thinking, oh, it's March, I'll get that tour booked in July right now. You may be looking at December at this point, or 2023.
Yeah, well, so that ticketing news that you talked about, my interpretation, which may be wrong, was twofold, that they were maybe having a hard time appealing to high dollar ticket buyers because people at large are still just more like, ah, I don't know if I should pay that much for a concert that could get canceled, because we're so used to being defensive now in our spending because of COVID. It's like people don't want to just outright commit, but maybe they'll take a chance and buy a ticket for $25 or something.
Yeah, I think the main thing I was taking away from it was that there was so much inventory. I think what you're saying is also a potential thing that I have a feeling once people, if people that have, you know, been very concerned and have stayed in and not done things and tried to isolate during this period, I think once they get over the hump of experiencing something, they'll probably be like, all right, I'm back. I got to live life.
It's like peeling the Band-Aid off, do it all at once.
Yeah. I mean, there was times where during this whole 2 years, especially like the first 6 months, where it felt like, now I know what it feels like to be on house arrest, and it's terrible. Yeah. It's like, I understand why it's terrible. So anyway, we want to hear what you're experiencing. Are you having an easy time booking gigs? Are you finding that your fans are ready to show up to shows? Let us know. Weigh in on the comments or call our listener line and let us know, because other artists want to hear from you as well. This is one of those things where we're all experiencing different things depending on where you live in the world and what part of your country you live in. The rules could be different. So definitely take an opportunity. Let us know. Share your thoughts, because it just helps all of us.
Well, we don't want to just drop this, you know, sad bomb on you that you're all aware that you've been dealing with anyways. We do have some constructive advice, although some of it is cautionary as well. But yeah, we've got some tips to try and dig out of this mess and kind of piece your career back together.
Yes. So these are the new rules of music networking. And, you know, some of these are things that have been networking ideas for a while, but coming out of a pandemic or a gap, if you've had a gap in your career, because this could be applicable even if you've just haven't been doing music for a while, that things have changed. So one, many pros have moved on. So those club bookers that you used to have a great relationship with, they may not be there anymore. I've seen this happen a lot. I've seen this happen multiple times. And in fact, I was talking to somebody recently that just said, yeah, they keep changing. I don't even know who works there anymore. And it's, you know, people that they used to have really strong relationships with. Number two, others will be swamped. So if the venue had been waiting around, working with a skeleton crew, understanding what restrictions and things would be. There might be a sudden influx of work and then figuring out who's going to handle it and restaff it. So have some patience, but also it might mean that you need to be aggressive with following up. Number three, do the legwork. Spend some time figuring some of this stuff out, reassessing the venue situation or just the industry professionals in your area, because it's not just about booking gigs, but if you're ramping up your music career, things might have changed, whether it's the press contacts, organizations. You know, the music industry is one of those places where there's been a lot of turnover. Number four, keep emails even shorter. This plays into number two, but tell them how you can help, what you can offer, and what you're looking for, and then get out. Don't give them this. If there's multiple paragraphs, you're doing it wrong. So let's just say that. If there's multiple paragraphs, you're doing it wrong. A couple sentences. And, you know, also doing the legwork, check the venue's websites because they have calendars and do that. That's what we mean by doing legwork. But keep the emails shorter and say, hey, I see a gig. You have an open date, this date. I can fill it. I can bring this many people. Let's make it happen. Number five, be even more persistent because, like I said, being aggressive, you're going to need to follow up. They're probably overwhelmed and maybe offer to help. If you have some time and you can help them and you have a history of playing successful shows in your area, maybe you can pitch in and help and provide a little assistance that earns you some goodwill. Number six, ask other artists for help. This is the best time to team up with people in your scene and start to put together bills of like, hey, go to the venue with a package ready to go. We've got these three artists. Together, we estimate we'll get X amount of tickets sold. And our audience loves beer. So you're going to sell so much alcohol. That's how you, you know, position yourself in a way that does the work for them. And number seven, update your contact sheet. This is going to be very important because there has been a lot of turnover. Venues have gone out of business. Maybe the venue's still there and it seems like it's the same venue, but it has new ownership. Find out. And this is where you can also ask other artists for help. And like, hey, do you know who's booking here now and what the situation is? Because, you know, there's venues here in Portland where we are that are still there, but I'm sure none of the staff are the same. And it may not even be the same owner. Number eight, look for alternative venues. This is something I've noticed during the pandemic that has been an interesting development, at least where I am. I'm in a small town outside of Portland, Oregon. We have our own like little classic downtown, and we have a lot of tap rooms and breweries and places that never had music. But during the pandemic, when restaurants started opening back up, they started having live music and have actually turned into legitimate venues. And they just used it as a sort of a draw to get people out, but now have turned into legit venues doing really great things. So alternative venues may have popped up. And that could also be other organizations and such that you haven't thought of. Number nine, be ready for last minute offers. And we'll get to another section in a minute about getting the dust off and get the rust off of your performances. We'll talk about that in a minute, but be ready, because right now, if a venue is going, okay, all the mandates are gone, we can get back to normal. What are we going to do for Friday? Well, if you're ready, you might get a last minute gig. Chris, what do you have to add about all of that?
Well, I don't have any other items to add, but I will put emphasis on the alternative venues, not just because it's super probably necessary to get gigs right now, but also in my experience, those have been the most fun gigs generally that I ever have. Like when I think back on some of my favorite gigs, they've been in bookstores and in art studios and like wineries and places you don't really think of as like, you know, it's not the cool rock club. I've had good gigs at those places too, but my most memorable gigs where I felt like I was doing something special and had a real connection with the audience. I think that's one benefit of alternative venues. The other thing is that you generally find that the owners of these spaces are psyched to have you there. It's like they're not burdened by loud bands seven nights a week. It's like you might be the only thing they have there all season. So it's an event. They're excited. They get their customers or whatever involved. And really for them, it may be an extra 4 or 5 hours of work to stay late one night. And so they're happy to have you there. That sort of takes some of that weird pressure off of you as an artist that you feel when you go into a really prestigious music venue and you're like, I got to pack this place out. I got to sell a bunch of booze. The ticket should be $25. You know, there's just a lot of overhead type pressure with traditional venues, and alternative venues just, in my experience, just take a lot of that off the plate so you can really just be present in your performance. So that's what I would say about that. And then I think I mentioned this earlier in the episode, but like, as you're rebuilding your network and you make a new spreadsheet and you're asking friends and you're doing the legwork to find the contact, I have a feeling a lot of musicians are going to start to get pretty bitter about having to redo work that they felt like they paid their dues. I paid my dues, man. I shouldn't have to pay them again. And like, okay, cool. But what's that going to get you besides just a wall of bitterness? Like, at some point, it's like the whole world went through this. We're all kind of in the same boat. So whatever you have to do to like kick yourself out of that little pit of resentment and just get back to work. And yeah, maybe you have to pay some dues that you already paid, but oh well, that's where we're at.
Yeah. One point that you made that was really great about the alternative venues, like those places I mentioned that I've seen in my town here start having music. It has only been on Thursday and Friday night. And it's like, they're super excited about it. They're promoting the artist. They're ready and willing to help in any way they can. I don't know what all their financial structures with artists have been. There have been cover charges or there has been just music there, but they're getting quality enough that I'm sure they're compensating those artists at some level. I'm not exactly sure. But the thing is, those establishments only having music two nights means, like you said, they're not like, here comes another dumb band who's going to want everything and complain about the green room. And it's just like, that's not the situation here. They're super excited. And so that's been something that I've really noticed during the pandemic. Like, oh, this is interesting, because venues were shut down for so long, especially in the part of the United States I'm at, they were shut down for over a year, like shut, nothing. And so restaurants started seeing an opportunity to enhance the experience there. And it's been interesting to see. Yeah. So lots of good things to think about there. The last minute offers one is one that's, I think, going to be important, that if you start putting out feelers, you might be offered something like, hey, we've got an opening tomorrow, can you fill it? You'd be like, oh, well, so be ready.
Yeah. And that happened to me last summer. You know, the first time we thought the pandemic was completely over, I ended up getting tons of sort of last minute offers out of the blue for all these summer festivals and parades and stuff. And it almost became a problem for me to, I had too many options and I had to start being careful about turning things down because I didn't want to dilute my audience or whatever, but be ready.
Yeah. So there's a lot to chew on there. If you have advice for artists, call our listener line 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. But this podcast just has so much more to give and we're going to move on to it. Chris, what do you got for us?
All right. We're out of practice. So here are my six tips for getting back on stage. First, practice. You know, the old saying of rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. I don't care if you've been, you know, singing in your basement or whatever you've been doing. If you haven't been in front of people, you're going to be pretty rusty. And so get the band back together. If you're a solo performer, run through your long sets, do it over and over and over. Get that stamina back. Second, make sure you test your gear because cables start to crackle and, you know, synthesizer knobs get dirty and strings break and stuff. And so make sure, plug everything in, run through your set with all your gear, make sure it's in working order. The other thing you should do is actually practice setting up your gear and tearing it down, because load-in is another thing we're out of practice in. So you don't want to piss off the venues by taking forever and problem solving on the fly. Third, shake off the performance rust with a low risk performance. And what I mean by that is basically an open mic. This is what I did. I went to an open mic a couple weeks ago and I was like, this is the perfect place for me to suck. No one will care. Doesn't matter. I'm only playing three songs. If I'm really uncomfortable, I can bail after one song. So not that every artist can do an open mic in that way, but if there's some kind of like informal basement show, something like that, it's a good way to dip your toe in and get back in gear. Fourth, our physical health through this pandemic, a lot of people has gone to crap. We've eaten terrible food. We've been sedentary and not being as active. And then for singers, we haven't been singing as much. So there's a lot of ways in which our bodies might be failing us. So prepare for that and try to get back in shape, eat healthy again. You know, part of practicing is actually getting your voice back in shape. So if it doesn't work, if you try your best to get back in shape and you still kind of have a bad performance, that's okay. The fifth thing on my list is be kind to yourself. This pandemic has made us all live through something we never expected to live through. So don't expect to just be back to normal and 100%. Be kind to yourself. And last thing, because gigs might be sparse because there's so much competition for them, it might mean you're not playing nearly as much as you want to, but you have to stay ready. So I would say schedule your weekly or however often you need to practice to just always be on your game. Make sure you're doing that regardless of whether you have gigs on the books or not, because as we said earlier, there might be a lot of last minute gig opportunities.
Lots of great stuff there. I started laughing when you said the thing about even loading in, because I have been there so many times. Been there a few times myself, but when I've been playing with somebody and they show up and clearly they were at home and just took all their gear and haphazardly just threw it in stuff. And then they get to the stage and like dump it out on the stage. And you're like,
the cables are all twisted up like a bag of snakes.
And they're just drifting around trying to figure out what to do. Like they've never played on stage before. And I'm not talking about people that haven't played on stage before. I'm talking about like, it's been a while and you're like, oh, how do I connect this and what goes where? And it's like,
oh, God forbid you have to also bring your own PA. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's the opening band or, you know, that you're waiting to line checks or the band before you or whatever, you're like, oh my gosh, please. So yes, I mean, some of that people would say, oh, whatever, but no, go test your gear. My pedal board has been sitting here behind me here at home, not going anywhere. And when I started taking it places, it's like the cables are cracking. I'm like, this has been sitting right here doing nothing. Why are cables going out?
It's the same thing that's happening to our bodies when we don't use them. They fall apart. It's like, no, I should be in good shape. I haven't used it.
But I like what you're saying about be ready, because I think we are going to be in a situation where there are still a lot of cancellations happening for various things, whether, hey, things may be open, but a band member from the band that was supposed to play tested positive for COVID, or the gas prices are out of control, so a band decided that they can't make the show. Or there's just a number of reasons why, as people are starting to gear back up, things could not work out and there be open slots and last minute gigs. So I think that's really great. And I like what you said about shake off the rust with a low risk performance, because that's something that every time you get out of the habit of doing something, especially performing, you realize, whoa, this is far more physical than I remembered. This takes a lot more out of me. And sure, I could just stand up there and play an uninspired gig, but to really get back in the mode of like, I'm on stage, I need to really engage these people and put together a set that's gonna create fans, it takes some, you know, getting back on the treadmill, making sure you're in shape.
Yeah, well, when I
played that open, both metaphorically and physically.
When I played that open mic, I had a lot of realizations in that 9 minutes or whatever it was. One of them was that remembering that feeling of what it's like to set up in front of an audience. Like, you know, not every gig you're going to be behind curtains that close and you get the privilege of setting up 5 hours before the gig and stuff. So this was one of those moments where I'm rushing on stage, setting up my gear in front of people. And there's this weird bit of adrenaline that happens where I'm not thinking fully clearly, or I'm not being as careful as I should be. And an example of that is I need my keyboard to be at this height if my chair or whatever is at this height. You know, you get used to your performance position. And if you're rushing, you make these little concessions of like, crap, I got to play. All right, the keyboard's too low, but whatever, I'll deal with it. And then during your set, you realize all the muscle memory is kind of out of whack. And then you're like, oh, my adrenaline got the best of me. I should have taken. And that's just one little thing. I was also dealing with realizing my vocal range is a little bit less than it was. And my memory for songs and chord changes, it was all rusty. And thankfully, everyone was like, that was great. So I fooled everyone. But internally, I felt like fairly stressed about literally everything. So I was glad it was an open mic, and hopefully that prepares me for when I have an actual serious gig to just go a little slower, be more prepared.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing that I'll say a lot about touring and playing shows and why it's so important to really practice, but actually practice how you plan to perform, because so much of when you're on stage isn't about remembering the songs. It's like dealing with all the elements around you, the cable going out, the sound not sounding like it did at soundcheck, the person on the front row being really distracting. There's so much mental stuff coming at you that's beyond just being able to play well, that it's like getting back in that mode of like, oh yeah, part of the getting back on stage is being prepared to play while dealing with all these other external forces that don't happen in my rehearsal space.
Yeah. And it's hard to account for the vibe in the room until you're on stage. And then sometimes if you're not in your best shape as a performer, the vibe in the room suddenly sets the tone for your own performance and emotions, as opposed to your performance changing the vibe in the room, which is kind of like you sink to their level as opposed to like lifting them up to yours.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you're getting back on stage and going through some processes and doing things, we want to hear about it. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. We want to hear, what are you doing to prepare? Are you heading on the road? Have you been playing shows? Again, it could be different scenarios. Wherever you are in the world, some people it's been game on this whole time. Most of us it hasn't. But yeah, let us know. And if you've got advice for other artists, what you went through, what helped, what didn't, or maybe it was a total disaster. We love those stories too. But we've got one more segment here for the post-pandemic music career emergence. We're going to be talking about getting your music marketing house in order, because we've probably been letting some things go, not paying attention to certain properties that we manage for our career, just because, you know, the state the world's been in. So number one, update your bio. It's always good to go back and look what it says. Probably some things have happened. Maybe you've released music. Artists always neglect their bio. Forget the pandemic. You've probably not updated your bio, because just artists are terrible at updating our bios. So go check that out. Number two, refresh your website. Go put a new coat of paint on your website and maybe try a new theme. Just make it look fresh. You don't have to build it from the ground up. Just freshen it up, add some new content, move some things around. Give people the idea that have been there a handful of times recently that new things are happening. Take new pics, new band photos, new artist photos. You don't have to hire a photographer. If you've got an iPhone, the cameras on those are amazing. Just take some well thought out photos that feel more like band photos, not just snapshots, and get those updated. That's another indicator to people that new stuff is happening. Audit your social presence. And auditing your social presence might mean updating header images, logos. May just take stock in what has value, what you should be focusing on, and all that. Number five, reassess your social usage. I think that goes along with number four. Maybe your audience has moved on to a new platform. Like if you're just starting to re-engage with your career, maybe you've been kind of just laying low for the last couple of years. Maybe your audience is on a different social platform. Maybe not, but really assessing what has value for you. And it's okay to let go of things that no longer have value. Number six, keep track of the numbers. It's always good to dive into your analytics and see what's happening, what's connecting, because a lot of times we neglect these things. And, you know, I'm not one to say that you should be like hyper invested in analytics, but they are good indicators of opportunities for your music. Maybe success is happening where you didn't know, but just re-engage with those. A lot of times you find good marketing hooks in there, some inspiration around content. It's good to dive in there. Number seven, maximize revenue opportunities. You've heard me talk on this podcast a lot about how I love my band Zoogle website, because they have a commission-free selling from the website, a great store, all this store functionality. And it's been an opportunity for me that I've focused on during the pandemic to maximize sales opportunities there, whether it's a zip file of our entire music catalog that I put there for a price, or a PDF download, like sheet music, or, you know, selling CDs and physical merch. We have these cool buttons that we have that I just really took the opportunity to maximize revenue opportunities there. And speaking of that, number eight, it is time to think about merch. If you are heading back out to play shows, What's your merch situation? Do you have what you need? There's lots of options that don't involve buying enormous amount of stuff and having boxes and boxes of triple XL and double small t-shirts stuck in your basement. So there's options out there in order to fill out that merch table. T-shirts are great, but I know a lot of artists feel like they get stuck with a lot of sizes that people don't want. And we have info about that for you too on our blog that can help with that. But stock up on merch. Number 9, update your ad strategy. If you've got some shows, if you've just got more activity, think about your opportunities to add some momentum with some advertising, whether that's through show.co, our ad platform that we have that can help you target and reach music fans, or Facebook ads or video ads, whatever. Start thinking about that and thinking about the opportunities for you to move your career forward with that. And number 10, redefine content. And I think there's, you know, a lot of artists get stuck in a vein of, oh, this is what I have to do to connect with people. But as we've seen, social platforms evolve quickly. Not only the platforms we may have been using evolve and what might have worked in the past no longer works, but then new platforms emerge, like TikTok has exploded. Is that an opportunity for you? Are your fans there? Is it not? What do you have to do to engage there? Is it totally different than what you've been doing? That's something to reassess. So, Chris, what do you think about that list? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. On the updating your ad strategy, it reminds me of something you were talking about the other day, which is how Facebook in particular is, I believe Google and YouTube might be doing something similar, but they're restricting the targeting options, basically. So you might have gotten used to, if you're running Facebook ads, targeting sounds like artists and saying like, oh, you know, Billie Eilish, I'm going to target her fans. That might not be an option for you anymore. So the way in which you even conceptualize who your audience, your targetable audience is, may be completely different now that you're back in the swing of it post-COVID. So that might be something you reassess about your ad strategy, is how to find audiences online. Tied in with that, I'm also thinking, when the reassessing your social usage, we recorded a whole episode about this, like maybe 3 episodes ago, but it's basically how, it's a whole episode about how in some ways social is completely still necessary, but also such a drain on our energy and sense of self-esteem as artists sometimes. So I think it's completely fine to take stock in a just sort of mental health way about how social is serving you and how it's screwing you, because it's probably doing a bit of both. And the things that aren't working for you, feel free to stop doing them, because these things are ad platforms more than they're social platforms. And if that's true, it means you can just create some ads, create a winning ad strategy, test things, and then just run ads. And that can help you build audience instead of you feeling like you're getting on the hamster wheel or treadmill or whatever we called it that just never ends. And similarly, like Kevin mentioned, platforms are constantly changing and constantly shifting what sort of content they prioritize. That doesn't have to mean you keep chasing. You know, just because Instagram now favors reels doesn't mean you necessarily need to make 15-second funny skit videos. Like, if you just take cool still photos, keep doing that. If you're really into writing essays, keep doing that. Like, your audience is out there. You'll find them. You don't always have to just stick with the trend. And the last thing on this list that made me laugh is take new pics. And I laughed because at some point in the pandemic, I said to my wife, can you take some photos of me in the backyard? Because I've got a lot more gray in my beard than I did during my last photo shoot. I think we've all aged about 10 times the amount we should have in the past 2 years. And let's not lie to the world. Let's take pictures of our new beleaguered selves.
Yeah. And we said new pics, not nude pics.
Yeah. Although, you know, I don't want to dampen your creativity.
You know, you mentioned, is social media serving us? And the thing that popped into my mind is social media serving us, or are we serving it? Because I think a lot of times that's really what we're doing. We're serving them. And you made a very good point that can't be stated enough, that these are all ad platforms now. We are the product and the advertisers are there to reach us. So you got to make sure that what you're doing there is serving your career. There's nothing that says you have to be there. Obviously, there are some great ways to reach fans on social media, but your mental health and you growing as an artist and actually writing, recording music that people want to hear is priority number one. So those things are very, very important.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff in there. If you are updating or finding things, or you think we left something off the list, you know, we want to hear from you. Weigh in 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff in there. We have four different segments on this episode that were really geared around different aspects of, like, okay, whether it's you're emerging because you just had to take a break, or it's because you've been chomping at the bit this whole time, just waiting for the world to start feeling like the new normal or whatever normalcy is going to return. It appears that's happening. You've been chomping at the bit. It's like, this should give you a lot to chew on and really help you start building a new foundation to move things quickly and take advantage of the opportunities and the, you know, realization that the world has changed in some degree, and the music business, especially the gigging world, might be very different than what we left at the beginning of 2020. So hope that's helpful. And yeah, we want to hear from you what you think. If there's some important points we forgot, please weigh in. If you're watching on YouTube, put it in the comments, or we gave out all the listener info so you can reach us. And speaking of that, let's get to our calls. Here's the first one.
Gentlemen, great show. I called the last week and you guys were, again, a wealth of information. I had a question about pro publishing. My name is Joel. I go by the name In Dark Solitude and also the Atomic Tiki. After research for a month, you guys were able to answer my question in 10 seconds. I got it figured out. So next question, I'm going through all of my releases and upgrading them to pro. I do have one album out there. It's a classical album. Okay. So originally I put everything under public domain, you know, Mozart, Beethoven, etc. However, I did rearrange, rewrite, and recompose a lot of these, or all of these songs. So would it be worth upgrading this album to pro publishing, seeing as that it is someone else's work? I appreciate it and keep up the great, great work.
All right. Thanks for the call again. Hey, and you know, if you want to get on the podcast, it's not hard. Joel here
twice in 2 weeks.
Times. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's not hard. Just call in with your great question and we'll answer it here. So the basic answer is no, you can't upgrade those to pro. We cannot handle that publishing scenario for you. Now, there are some more troublesome ways we could go about in trying to collect some in that situation. But for the purposes of what we do, if it's recognizable as anything in the public domain, any piece of it, then we're like, no, we're not going to get into really slicing and dicing, not with our publishing administration program. So I would say don't upgrade that album. And if lots of great things are happening with that music, you might want to check in and we can maybe point you in the direction of someone who might be able to help you with that more complex issue.
Yeah. And just to go into the weeds a little bit on publishing, from how he described the music, it still seems like basically he, even if he's doing his own unique arrangements, it still seems like he's doing, you know, faithful compositions of public domain works. Like, doesn't sound like he's changing the compositions enough where they'd be new compositions that draw from public domain. It just kind of seems like you're doing your own spin on classical stuff, which is still in the public domain.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, so that's where it gets down to real nitty gritty and being able to hear it and understand what you actually changed or contributed. But we don't get that technical with our publishing admin service. It's pretty straightforward. So hope that helps. Thanks for calling. That's twice been on the podcast. The number's on the screen if you're watching on YouTube.
Let's see if you can do three in a row.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the next call.
Hi, guys. It's Elijah, a.k.a. Sibirek. So, must say, your podcast is just unprecedented help for musicians. This is so cool. So thank you very much. So my question is simple, but I guess maybe it's an old question, but I didn't find it in this specific phrasing. So is there a certain regularity of releasing a single that can significantly increase the chance of being picked up by the Spotify algorithm and editorial team? If there is, which is it? For example, if I release a single every week, pitching to the editorial team and with this pitching tool, does it have a good chance or it's almost no difference at all? So, yeah, that's it. One single every week. I'm just curious, what does it give you? Thank you. Bye.
All right. I think he said his name was Elijah. That's what Google Translate put it as. But good question. So first off, he asked about the algorithm. And when people talk about the algorithms on any platform, it's all speculation. So I just want to make sure people understand that algorithms, like even people that work at companies, don't know how the algorithm works for certain things. It's usually a small group of people. And depending on how much AI they've incorporated into it, maybe nobody knows how it actually works. So a lot of it is just speculation based on observations when people talk about how the algorithm works. Just want to make that clear. But what I've been told about Spotify and the pitching tool is that it's only available to you 4 weeks after a release. That's what I've been told. So if you're releasing weekly, you won't get advantage of the pitching tool, which then allows you to pitch to editors. And so that's something to be aware of. So releasing every week, you know, you won't have access to that tool. But on the other hand, what we have observed is that consistent releases, the system and the platform seems to give preference to artists that do have more consistent release habits, meaning that if you're releasing more consistently, people are pushing the play button more consistently. So that to them indicates engagement.
Yeah, my thought on it is I've heard lots of strategies. Put stuff out every week, put stuff out every 6 to 8 weeks. You know, everyone's looking at this way of sort of gaming the system without, I think, paying attention to the most important thing, which is I don't know the ins and outs of Spotify's algorithms, but I can say fairly confidently that the most important thing is that quality engagement happen on anything you do put out. So even if you only release a song every 6 months, as long as the people who are showing up to hear that song in a pretty good proportion are saving it, are listening through the whole thing, are listening on repeat, are adding it to playlists, that is what matters to Spotify. That's what's going to help them push at least that particular song beyond your existing audience. So it's really as much as you can do to focus on quality engagement. I think that's the most important thing you can do. Instead of trying to get a bunch of random passive listening on third-party playlists that get you plays but might not be getting you in front of the exact right audience. So that's what I would say is the most important thing. Whether you're putting out music every year or every week, focus on, getting your fans to care and keep listening. And then beyond that, frequency is key, like Kevin said.
Yeah. You mentioned some actions that are more important to Spotify. You know, so if a lot of artists get tempted to go buy a bunch of fake streams. I haven't seen as many ads for those kind of things. I'm sure there's still lots of them out there, but I haven't seen as many ads for those kind of services lately. So maybe Spotify's really inhibited their ability to get bots streaming your music. But a lot of people go after that. But what really Spotify is looking for is more of a strong ratio. So the number of people listening to your music compared to the number of people saving it to their music catalog, which is them pushing the heart button, or them following you on Spotify. So all these things play into that. And if you look at Spotify for Artists, you will see that it gives you like how many people actually saved the track. So that's something, and it may have a percentage. I think in some instances, there's a percentage next to that. It's been a minute since I've dug in there. So that's something that's important to them. So focusing on activity that we know Spotify thinks is important. People who listen, following your profile, people who listen, saving the track. So it's not just about getting random plays. There's a mix. And that's what, you know, like we, I said, you, we don't know what the exact algorithm is, but we know these things play a part. They talk openly about that. They just won't tell you exactly how it influences it.
Well, and this might be completely obvious from this conversation so far, but to spell it out, if you're chasing vanity metrics, like just getting stream count on a particular song, you might be doing all the wrong things to drive up that stream count and teaching Spotify that no one actually likes your song. Like if, you know, if you get 10,000 people to hear it this week, but none of them saved it, none of them listened again, all you're doing is telling Spotify that no one likes your music. So they're less inclined to share future releases, at least out of the gates. So, word of warning.
Yes. Yes. So I hope that helps. And, you know, you can look in your Spotify for Artist account and get some of that data. And, the last thing I would say, because he asked about the algorithm, if you are using the pitching tool, make sure you are using it properly. It asks for descriptions for your music. Don't tell them what you think they want to know. That doesn't help. Tell them what it really is and come up with a good description. Like it'll ask, I forget how it positions it because it's been since our last release in September that I've used the pitching tool. Actually, we did a Christmas single. What am I thinking? I used it then. But it'll ask you to describe the song, but I think it also is wanting like some, how they present it is more just like any noteworthy thing that you are doing as an artist. Take time to be thoughtful about it. Don't write an essay. It does limit how much you can say, but give them some hooks there, some hooks about who you are as an artist, about the music, about any accomplishments, just so they understand, you know, again, this is one of those things that if an editor sees it, they're having to make some judgments that oftentimes album art, these descriptions play a big role in it, as much as some of you listening hate to admit it or hate to hear it and insist that only the music matters and you shouldn't have to describe your music. Well, it helps. So make sure you're thoughtfully putting that together. So that's something that I know a lot of artists just skip over. All right. Well, again, we love getting your calls and emails. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment below. And on no matter where you're listening to the podcast, be sure you subscribe so you're not missing an episode. We're doing them weekly now, but we're going to take a week off here and there because, you know, you got to have some time off just to go on vacation or catch up,
to South by Southwest next week. So, so next week specifically, there will not be a new episode, but then we'll be back with a good discussion about one of my friends who's doing a lot of really cool things on Instagram to promote his music.
Yep.
Good stuff coming.
Yes. And you know, I think I just leave it with this and I don't know if this is a hot take, but we can make it a hot take. You are entering back out into a world that has gone through so much trauma and we've all had our heels dug in. Things have been very politicized and the world is just a mess. And an artist that used to work at CD Baby was posting on Facebook that I thought was interesting and reminding everybody that musicians and music itself were seen as healers and things that bring refreshment and goodness and joy and happiness and thoughtfulness. And I would just say, lean into that. The world needs healing. It needs refreshment. And you're going to deal with people, especially now, you're going to run into people that you just flat out disagree with. It's okay. Take a deep breath. As artists, I think where music benefits people the most is if we take the humble approach and let our music and our art form speak for itself. So just know that you're going to run into fans that are diehard fans that you're like, I hate this person now. You're going to run into those situations or people that act weird around you because they don't know how to be in public yet. Take the humble approach. And as artists, let's focus on healing, bringing refreshment, bringing happiness and joy back to the earth. And we'll be in a much better place. So it's going to be interesting as we get out there and start engaging with more and more people that are all over the place.
I feel like I just watched a sermon, to which I'll just say, amen.
All right. All right.
I'm in. I'm buying what you're selling.
If it's a sermon, can it be a hot take? I don't want to think people We got all these flames around.
Right. Maybe we'll just have heavenly clouds.
Yeah, the clouds will be. Ah, you know. But anyway, all right. And again, DIY Musician Conference. You want to talk about refreshment? Come, let's be together.
We'll have refreshments.
We will have refreshments, adult beverages, both literal refreshment and emotional and spiritual refreshment of being together, being with like-minded folks, learning from each other. DIYMusicianCon.com. Get your tickets. The price is going to go up significantly soon, and you don't want to have missed out. So we'll leave you with that, and
see you soon.
We'll catch you next time. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.